Stubman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, 1025, 1063. The game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda Gentry, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios. Caroline, you know that feeling when there's some tea going on?
And piping hot tea.
And it's funny. Like, yeah. it's a funny situation, and then funny becomes serious real quickly, and all of a sudden it's not as funny anymore.
I feel like a lot of things with Antonio Brown kind of start that way.
Sure.
Like, it's funny, like, he freezes his feet, and then it comes out that he's throwing rocks at a delivery truck, and it gets real not funny real fast.
Yeah, that is a very fair analogy. And that's what's happening right now with Kentucky basketball. So, the whole story. John Calipari told The Athletic he wants a new practice facility.
Uh-huh.
And so obviously he's taking his anger publicly, and he tells The Athletic that they're a basketball school and they should provide for basketball, and he wants a new practice facility, and talks about how Georgia and Alabama are football schools and that they do whatever it takes for football and Kentucky should do the same for basketball. Mark Stoops sees it. He gets mad, retweets it. Now it becomes a national story because it's coach-on-coach crime at Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. And then other coaches around the SEC are playing with it.
Sure. Everybody was having a good time.
Yes.
It was funny. Then on Saturday, the Kentucky football coach, Mark Stoops, had a press conference. Now, I've told you this. Mark Stoops, and he's done a great job at Kentucky for what he inherited and how, honestly, Kentucky football traditionally stinks and they don't stink anymore. But how many times have I told you over the years, Mark Stoops not the brightest guy in the world?
Yeah.
So that's always... And I like Mark Stoops, and I don't know what he thinks of me, or even if he has an opinion of me anymore, but I always kind of felt like Mark Stoops not the brightest guy in the world. But I say this because Stoops had a press conference, and he was asked about it, and he kind of doubled down on it. And then Mitch Barnhart, the athletic director at Kentucky, had a press conference. Now, let me say this about Mitch Barnhart. I've known Mitch Barnhart for 8 years. Every time we see each other, we chat. I don't have his phone number. He doesn't have mine.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't consider us friends or anything like that. I like Mitch Barnhart.
Acquaintances.
And I think Mitch Barnhart's a really good athletic director. I don't think he's a great athletic director. I think he's a really good athletic director. And I think he's a really good guy. That being said, word on the street is he and Cal really have not liked each other for a long time. And that's okay. Because not every relationship like that is going to be lovey-dovey. But Mitch Barnhart drew a line in the sand on Saturday that made it serious. This ratcheted the drama up a notch. Because if you look at an organizational flowchart, coach is technically a subordinate of athletic director. But who's more important at Alabama, Greg Byrne or Nick Saban?
Nick Saban.
Okay. So, in places that have star coaches, the coach sometimes is more powerful than the athletic director. Calipari is the basketball coach at Kentucky. He is a very famous basketball coach. And so Mitch Barnhart, at his press conference Saturday, in my opinion, drew the line that is, you work for me. Now, he didn't say it directly, but he definitely said it. Here's what he said on Saturday.
I have two coaches that have been with me, one 13 years and one 10 years. I can't speak to that. That's their call. But I will tell you, I'll be there with them. I'll walk with them, both of them. I've walked with them all this way. I hired them both. I gave them the opportunities to coach here, their families to come here, to win championships here, to go to bowl games here. I've walked with both of them through both good and bad, and they both know it. They don't have to fear the administration. The administration's been right here the whole time, and we got a president that's been right here the whole time. It ain't changing. And they've been provided every opportunity to do the very things that they want to do to be successful. That isn't changing as long as I'm in the chair. We will have that support. And if that's not good enough, you know, coaches change a lot in today's world. They do.
That right there was, I'm the boss.
Ooh.
That was, hey, you may make more money than me. You may have more commercials than me. You may go on SportsCenter more than me. You may be more public than me. I'm the boss.
I'm in control of your job.
I hired you. I supported you. I have never put you in a position where you have to fear the administration or fear me. But I'm the boss. And you know how these things go. This is coach and general manager, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, the owner's going to decide. In the case of Kentucky, ultimately the university president. And if Cal wants to push the envelope, because sometimes these famous coaches that have a lot of juice, they get very upset about things like that. That public telling of, oh, you're going to tell me? Well, let's go to the president and see what the president thinks. Because who would you rather have? Would you rather have me? I'm John Calipari. And I have been operating this Kentucky basketball ship for the last 12 years. I won a national championship 10 years ago. Would you rather have me? Or would you rather like to go out in the coaching market and see if you can go get somebody who might be as good as me? Or will you kick him out to the curb? And so I don't know how Cal's going to take this. But not only that, Barnhart told a story, and I thought the kind of the symmetry that Barnhart was using with this story was, look, this was a time that I was upset with my president, or I was upset about a situation, but my boss told me what to do, and I listened to my boss, and this is, again, another I'm the boss. This is a story Mitch Barnhart told on Saturday.
Dr. Caputo came in as a new president. He called me to his office one day, and he may not remember this, and it's a true story, and I was hurt terribly by it back then. I was not. He said, stop talking about Rupp Arena. He says, that's our facility. He goes, don't say another word about it. You're not talking about it anymore. He's my boss. Guess what I did? I stopped talking about Rupp Arena. Guess what happened 9 years, 9 years later? We got it fixed up. It took a little longer than any of us, probably fans, anybody else wanted. It's a pretty cool place. It was a really cool place before, really cool now.
So that was, my boss told me to hush, and I hushed.
And I did, and I got what I wanted.
I didn't go to Kyle Tucker in The Athletic and say, hey, Kyle Tucker, we need to have Rupp Arena because we're a basketball school. I didn't do that. When my boss told me to hush, I hushed. And I'm telling Cal to hush. And so now the question is, ball's in Cal's court. How is Cal going to respond? And I don't know the answer. I know this. I know that the athletic director now at DePaul is a guy by the name of Dwayne Peavy. And Dwayne Peavy was an assistant athletic director, associate AD at Kentucky. And Cal and Barnhart both were friends and respected Peavy. And Peavy's gone. I know that Mike Pratt, who used to call basketball games for Kentucky, who played for Adolph Rupp, who was teammates with Pat Riley and Dan Issel, I know that Mike Pratt was respected by both John Calipari and Mitch Barnhart. And Mike Pratt passed away about 2 months ago. And so he's obviously not a part of this. But again, this went from, ha-ha, the Kentucky basketball coach takes a dump on the football program by saying they're a basketball school, and the football coach fires back about how they've won 4 straight bowl games, kind of mocking the fact that Kentucky lost to St. Peter's last year. That's kind of funny. Coach-on-coach crime. Let's laugh about it. Well, now it's serious.
Mm-hmm.
Because now they're getting called into they're going to get called into the principal's office, the president, and I don't know how Cal's going to react to this. Because again, Mitch Barnhart has drawn the line in the sand that is, I am your boss, and you will listen to me. You might make more money than me, but I'm the boss. And I don't know how Cal's going to react to that. And the other thing about Cal, too, is the juice. Nick Saban's got juice. Cal hasn't won a championship in a decade. Cal hasn't been to the Final Four since 2015. They just got knocked out by a 15-seed St. Peter's. They disappoint every year. So how much juice does Cal really have? Because Cal is paid like a big-time championship coach, and he doesn't have as many titles as Bill Self. He doesn't have as many titles as Coach K or Roy Williams did. He didn't have as many titles as Jay Wright, too, at Villanova. So is Kentucky really, do they look at Cal as if he is irreplaceable and that they have to do whatever it takes to make him happy? Or can they tell him to take his $8 million and shut up because he doesn't win enough?
Well, you ask, what is Calipari going to do next? I think it all depends on how he views his leverage. Because you're right. Calipari hasn't won a damn thing in quite a long time.
10 years.
And I think Kentucky fans are all waiting, like, okay, when is the year that you're actually going to do something?
See, I don't know. Kentucky fans are weird. Because,
but I think Kentucky fans are really fed up with Calipari.
See,
after this
I don't.
How
I think
are you not fed up with him?
Because Kentucky fans are weird. Kentucky fans, it's weird. It's not a small town like Lexington is, but like they have the entire state. It's not like, I mean, it is covered. Kentucky basketball, at least when I was there, it was covered like a New York team. where every little thing was a story. Yeah. Everything. I mean, it had multiple beat writers from all these different outlets. There are more people who cover Kentucky basketball than there are who cover the Titans on a daily basis.
That is insane.
And so I've experienced it. But at the same time, there's like this small market mentality of it's a really Homer-centric environment. And it's almost like Kentucky fans, they love Calipari's recruiting. They love all these one-and-dones, even though they never win anything with him outside of Anthony Davis. They love him because they feel like every year when they get that player, it's like, oh, this is our year. We got Jamal Murray. It's like, we got Jamal Murray. This is going to be our year. And so that excitement, it's a consistent cycle. It's almost kind of like Tennessee basketball, except more intense.
Yeah.
Where Tennessee basketball fans are upset for about a day after Rick Barnes underachieves in the postseason. And then they move on and they start getting excited about the next season. The difference is that the highs are way higher and the lows are way lower. And the bar is way higher at Kentucky than it is at Tennessee. And so I thought after the St. Peter's loss, I thought that Cal was not going to be fired or anything.
Hot seat.
But I definitely thought that it was time for Cal to start winning. But then I kind of died off and Cal went back to being Cal. So,
well, then to that point, then Cal might feel like he has all the leverage. And then it depends on, to your point, it's the president's ultimate decision. So is the president going to look at Cal and the AD and say, look, AD, I can replace you, but this is John Calipari, and I can't replace him.
See, I don't know.
I don't know how the president feels.
And I don't know this. If Eli Capiluto, the president, tells Cal, like, hey, you need, Mitch Barnhart has said that he's got to take care of Memorial Coliseum, which is where the women's team plays. They need to take care of Memorial Coliseum. They got to take care of softball. They got to take care of all these things. And then they will get back and they will take care of the Kraft Center. You know, kind of a know your place, Cal. Mm-hmm. How will Cal feel about that? I don't know. Will Cal look to jump to the NBA because of it? I don't know. You know,
will
this
be
is
a
where,
spot for him in the NBA?
Oh, yeah. This is where the ego thing and the respect thing and all, this is where it all comes into play. And this is why these are the unknowns. Which side is the president going to take? How is Cal going to react if it's not his side? And again, but Mitch Barnhart, in my opinion, Mitch Barnhart's drawn his line in the sand. And it's serious. I could see a scenario where Cal ends up leaving. Because I think Cal's kind of tired of Kentucky, too.
Will Cal leave on his own accord? Or will that be the president saying...
They can't fire him.
Oh, they can't?
No, I mean, the contract, they give him a lifetime contract. Ah, which I thought was stupid when it happened.
That is dumb.
It's definitely been even stupider by the lack of results since they've done it. I mean, it's something like an $84 million contract. Jeez. And there's really no way out of it. So Kentucky
It would have to be Cal leaving on his own accord.
They can't fire him, but they can basically tell him, like, hey, you have to straighten up. And
well, if they can't fire him, then what's stopping him from not straightening up?
Well, if you don't straighten up, then that becomes like insubordination, and then you get fired for cause. Hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's kind of, this is where it gets tricky, right? Like nobody wants to have that conversation, but that's where it is. So let's get your reaction on this. Again, Kentucky basketball last week, it was funny because Kentucky is a basketball school and everybody knows it, but now it's serious. And the football coach, in my opinion, he's out of this. It's between the AD and the president and Cal. And it wouldn't shock me if Cal ends up walking the plank. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get to your phones on this. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063, The Game.
What did you think about the press conference down there with Coach Stoops? Any reaction to that?
You know, I said the wrong thing. Mark and I will be fine. We'll get back and talk about it. You know, I'm not real smart, and sometimes it doesn't come out the right way. That's my Italian in me, but we'll be fine.
John Calipari, there you go. They were in the Bahamas. That was on SEC Network or whatever. No, that interview wasn't. That was one of the local people that was in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. But Kentucky just spent like the last 4 days playing Bahama teams, Bahamian teams. You know, the little bonding trip or whatever they did.
Cute.
But said right there, you know, I said something I shouldn't have said about the football program. Yeah, probably true. But now it's ratcheted up to serious. When he said it, it was kind of funny. Now it's serious. The athletic director basically saying if they don't want to – if it's funny because he talks about the two coaches, Stoops and Cal. Like, if they don't want to be okay with this, then coaches change. He's not talking about Stoops. It's about Cal. It's about him and Calipari. Do you have a thought or do you want to go to the phones?
Well, I just – taking the break to marinate on our discussion last segment, I don't think that it's going to get to the point where Calipari leaves. Because he has the most cush job right now.
It's pretty cush.
He's got the cash. He's got the pedigree of the program.
He's the most important guy in the state.
100%. And I get it. You could say, well, he could leave for the NBA. He might be able to use that as leverage. But does he really want to work his way up, really from the bottom up in the NBA?
So
I wouldn't if I were him.
It's tricky with Cal. Cal's used the NBA as leverage about 15 times since the day he got to Kentucky.
And he's going to continue to use it because it works. But at what point is it a boy crying wolf?
His life was so miserable when he ran the Nets and picked Kerry Kittles over Kobe Bryant. And the story about how Kobe's agent, Arne Tellem, about how they hoodwinked Cal. I mean, it was embarrassing how they hoodwinked Cal. The general manager at the time, I believe it was Bobby Marks. I want to say it was Bobby Marks. Bobby Marks was like, Cal, they're bluffing.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, I think the idea was, you know, Kobe wants to be away because this is New Jersey at the time, the New Jersey Nets. Now they're in Brooklyn. But it was almost like Kobe, you know, needs to be away from his family in Philadelphia. So out west would probably be better. And then Kobe's agent said, if you take Kobe, we'll never, ever do business with the Nets again or something like that. And Kobe, because of that, Cal got scared and ended up drafting Kerry Kittles. And considering that most people listening right now have never heard of Kerry Kittles, I think Kerry Kittles said that even if he were picking at that point in time, he would have picked Kobe over him. And so that tells you how Cal is in the NBA.
Right.
So, no. Do I think Cal wants to go to the NBA? No. But, again, this goes back to respect. This goes back to the... For all I've done for this program, they were irrelevant when they had Tubby Smith, and they were terrible when they had Billy Gillespie. And for everything I've done for this program and this city, and for them to treat me like this just because I said what I said, you know, screw them. I'll show them. You know, there is a possibility that Cal does that. But I do think that Cal...
How much of it is just bluffing?
I bet Cal doesn't feel like he has the juice that he feels like he used to have when... The juice when they were winning more. And that's, you can't lose to St. Peter's. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. What do we have?
Josh texts in and says, my frustration with Calipari is his results with recruiting. How many current NBA players can you name from Duke, UNC, and Kansas versus the current UK NBA players?
There's so many UK NBA players. What's the point of that text?
Recruiting is probably the only thing that Kentucky fans shouldn't feel bad about.
No, they recruit.
Get the players in. Just can't win in the postseason.
I mean,
that's the problem.
I believe Oscar Tshiebwe was the National Player of the Year last year, and he's coming back to Kentucky. So the getting of the players is not Calipari's problem. The winning with the players. The winning with the players has always been Cal's problem.
And that's why the winning
is
a problem.
It was his problem
because you have
Memphis
so many good
with
players.
Derrick Rose. It was why he didn't win with John Wall. The 2015 Kentucky team had Devin Booker on the bench, and they didn't win. They won every game until they got to the Final Four, and they lost to Kansas, again, with Devin Booker sitting on the bench. And so, like, the idea that they're frustrated that Cal's not recruiting, that's not accurate. The problem is the winning. They've got the National Player of the Year, and they lose to St. Peter's? Seriously? St. Peter's? I didn't even know who the hell St. Peter's was.
I had to Google it.
Like, when they announced the brackets and they were like, Kentucky will play St. Peter's, I'm like, who is that? Who was St. Peter? And then I found out that St. Peter's the one at the gates.
I don't know.
The gates of heaven?
I understand what gates you're talking
about.
Yeah,
St. Peter's the one, I guess, supposedly. I mean, I'm not Catholic, but supposedly St. Peter is the one that you talk to when you reach the gates. And
which
St. Peter...
Great.
Is kind of like the bouncer, I would assume. He lets you know if you're in or you're out.
I don't know. I guess that's a fair analogy. There's just something feels a little sacrilegious about calling St. Peter a bouncer.
He's the one at the pearly gates. Now, the St. Peter's Peacocks told Kentucky that they were not allowed in the club in the first round of the tournament. What's next?
Mike checks in. I'm assuming that Mike is a Kentucky fan, says, I would rather have Mitch Barnhart over John Calipari.
Mitch Barnhart's a good athletic director. Now, how good of an athletic director? That's a fair question. But I personally believe that Mitch Barnhart is a pretty good athletic director. He struggled with baseball a little bit to get it right.
Still not great.
Not going to be disappointed over there too much because college baseball is really not that big of a deal. But
I'm trying to think, if you have a choice of being good or bad, you would choose good. And Kentucky baseball is not very good.
No, but, I mean, they're pretty much good at everything else. Like, they're good at football. They're really good at basketball, although how much does that have to do with Barnhart? He did hire Cal. They're okay. You know, they're good at women's basketball. They're the number one pick this year. It's almost like Calipari's coaching the women's team because they had the number one overall pick, but I think they lost to, like, Princeton in the first round, which they won the SEC.
Yeah, they
beat
the
South
SEC.
Carolina, and they beat South Carolina, won the SEC, and then they turned around and lost, I think, to Princeton in the first round of the NCAA tournament, which is so Calipari that it absolutely hurts. You want to know a fun fact about Calipari at Kentucky?
I would love to hear a fun fact.
Calipari, the year that he won the national championship at Kentucky, did not win the SEC tournament. Who won the SEC tournament that year?
What year was it?
2012.
Tennessee?
No, Ian. Kentucky?
Vandy.
There you go.
Ah, I did not know that.
Kevin Stallings and Vandy won the SEC championship, and Stallings wept like a baby on the bench with the towel in his eyes. And I was so proud as a Vanderbilt fan, but also as a Louisville student to have Vanderbilt beat Kentucky. It was like, it was a joy of honor in my life. Little did I know
joy and an honor
that Kevin Stallings would go on to do a very Kevin Stallings like thing and lose in the second round of the tournament as the favored team against Wisconsin. And that loss would allow Kentucky to recalibrate and they would beat Louisville in the Final Four in New Orleans. And so ultimately, it ended up good thing. And then, of course, we were stuck with Kevin Stallings for another 4 years coaching Vanderbilt. Now, the one thing I would say about Stallings is, as much as I dog Stallings, ever since he left, Vanderbilt may have actually been worse. And their coach right now, Jerry Stackhouse, is just as bad, if not worse, than Stallings. Probably significantly worse than Stallings. And I'm an anti-Stallings guy. But Vandy did at one point, actually, Vandy was good at basketball. What else we got?
Adam in Portland is accusing you of stirring stuff up with Kentucky.
How? I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. Nobody listening to this right now has the juice to be able to do something about this Mitch Barnhart-Cal drama.
Just saying.
There's not one person listening to this that has the juice to make what I said a bigger deal than what it is. Now, I will say this. You think I care? If all of a sudden Mitch Barnhart's like, you know, Jared made a really great point, and
yeah, I think you'd care.
I mean, selfishly, like from an egotistical standpoint, I would enjoy it. But as far as like, would it affect my day?
I think you would love it on all avenues, selfishly, and because your little Louisville Cardinal heart would be pumping red blood because Louisville could have a chance against Kentucky.
I mean, I don't hate Cal as the coach of Kentucky. Like, I, as a Louisville fan, I don't look at Cal as some immovable object that the Louisville Cardinals...
But is he not kind of an immovable object?
I don't know. We win plenty against him. We beat him the last time we played him. I mean, the Calipari thing, I mean, you know, it's one of those things. We lost to them in the Final Four in 2012. The next year, we won the national championship.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, how much do I... The 2014 game was a Sweet 16 game. They beat us, I believe, in overtime. And that was a great basketball game.
Yeah.
But I looked at it as we didn't play very well that night. Not that Cal is some super coach and we can't overcome him. I don't have a problem with Calipari. My bigger problem right now is with Kentucky football. Because we should not be losing to Kentucky football. And not only are we losing, but we're getting killed. And on top of it, it used to be that we would recruit, like, the really good quarterbacks. And we would win with good quarterbacks like a Brian Brohm or a Lamar Jackson or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, now Stoops and Levis is supposedly a good quarterback, but Stoops has done almost all his winning at Kentucky without the benefit of having a good program-changing level quarterback. Like, Steven Johnson didn't elevate the program or wasn't, you know, a superstar. And Touchdown Terry wasn't a superstar. And Patrick Toles and all the – they've never had that guy. And it's frustrating that Kentucky can beat us as much as they've beaten us when we have had better quarterbacks. We lost to them with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. How? That angers me. The Calipari losing in basketball, I don't mind. The bigger thing here, and this shows you like maybe how much of a like detached Louisville fan I am. I mean, I'm a really big Louisville fan. And somebody that I would consider, like, when I was in college, an older brother to me is now their athletic director. But I mean, I like Mitch Barnhart, and I like Cal. Mm-hmm. And I don't want these guys to lose their jobs. I mean, I don't know how well, like, I don't know how well Cal knows me. I mean, I guess I don't know if he does know me. I mean, I've had Cal on the show. I've run into Cal a couple times. But, again, I don't really have a relationship at all with Calipari.
Yeah.
Stoops, I haven't talked to in, like, 5 or 6 years. Barnhart, I like Barnhart. I think he likes me. But I don't want those guys to lose their jobs. And I don't think that it's, like, that they've done anything that has offended me or anything like that. But I'm just keeping it real. I'm just keeping it real. That when the athletic director comes out, an athletic director makes less than star coach. And when the athletic director comes out and says that if they don't talking about the football and the basketball coach, but really talking about the basketball coach, because Stoops will get in line.
Yeah.
If he's sitting there saying, you know, if they don't want to get in line and they don't want to do it this way, as long as I'm here, coaches change all the time. That is a you work for me. And that with egos and everything else, that can bubble over a relationship that already wasn't very good. Now, that has nothing to do with me. And I'm just telling you, it was funny at first with that, like, Kentucky's an everything school bullcrap. Like, that was funny because nobody believes that. But now it's serious. So, Adam well,
when
Portland,
the when the AD starts it. Calling shots and puts his thumb down on both Stoops and Calipari especially and says, hey, I'm in charge.
Like, Danny White at Tennessee is a very for-the-camera athletic director.
Oh, yeah.
He likes the camera. Mitch Barnhart does not. Mitch Barnhart is a very religious guy. He is a very, he keeps to himself for the most, I mean, it's not like he's not personable. He is, but he's not a showy person. So for him to get up there and say what he said, that tells you what his frustration level really is.
Oh, yeah.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get back to more of your phones on this. And 615-737-1025. Frank Reich. Boy, Frank Reich had a take. And some Titan fans were super, super salty about this Frank Reich take. And I got to tell you, I think it's good news for the Titans, if it's true. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063, The Game. I know they didn't have Jonathan Taylor out there, but other than that, it was their starting offensive line, starting receivers, Matt Ryan at quarterback. What did you think of Indianapolis's offense on Saturday?
They looked a little rusty. It didn't look like Matt Ryan was completely comfortable with the guys out on the outside. Certainly the Bills had some very young corners on the edges, Kyer Elam and Christian Benford, a first-round draft pick and a sixth-round draft pick, and they played extremely well, those young guys. They were very happy with how those guys played. They were extremely happy with the coverage they had in the back end. But I can't chalk it all up to the great play of those young corners. I think a little of it was the chemistry that's still building with Matt Ryan and those guys on Indianapolis.
That was Steve Tasker, longtime NFL player, longtime CBS analyst who was doing the Bills game. And you heard him right there saying, hey, the Bills' second-string defense played great, but Matt Ryan and that offense, they need to get it together. So Titans fans on Twitter sent this to me. This must have come from some fantasy thing. So apparently Frank Reich was talking to the media about Jonathan Taylor. And I guess there is a fantasy question about Jonathan Taylor getting fewer touches this season. And these Titans fans tweeted me and they were like, is this Frank Reich taking a shot at the Titans? And so I'll just read what it is and then we can evaluate. Okay. But I think there's something really important in this as well. Quote, Indianapolis Colts running back Jonathan Taylor could see a reduction in volume this coming season, according to Stephen Holder of ESPN. Stephen Holder covers the team for ESPN like TD covers the Titans.
Got it.
According to Holder, head coach Frank Reich told him that the goal is to win a championship, not make Taylor the MVP or rushing leader. If they need to cut back on his volume in order to accomplish that, so be it. Quote, you don't see the teams that have this ground and pound run game win championships, he said. Our best formula is to be balanced. I'm not saying he won't lead the league in touches because you never know how things are going to play out, but I almost don't want him to. This shouldn't deter fantasy managers from drafting Taylor at the 1.1 this draft season. So again, the quotes from Reich in here are the, I don't want him to win the MVP or the rushing title. We want to win championships. And I'm not saying he's not going to lead the league in touches, but I'm saying he's not going to lead the league in touches. So The idea of you can't win a championship, according to Frank Reich, the ground and pound style doesn't win a championship, so they need to be more dynamic on offense. Is that a shot at the Titans?
It might be a shot at the Titans, but I think more importantly, can we point out how dumb that is?
So we'll get to that in a second.
Okay, great.
My thing is, I don't think Frank Reich takes shots at people. So I think that Frank Reich truly believes.
But you don't think that there's at least a little bit of Titan undertone in that statement? We don't need him to win the rushing title. He doesn't need to, you know, lead the league in touches a la Derrick Henry. We don't win that way. We don't care about those kinds of things.
Truthfully, no.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised.
I do not see it. Only because I don't think Frank Reich does that. I think Frank Reich is one of the nicest people, and I've never met Frank Reich. I think Frank Reich must be one of the most nice and positive people ever. And that's why Carson Wentz didn't like Doug Peterson, but he liked Frank Reich. Frank Reich is a good cop, and Frank Reich needs a bad cop. And maybe Doug Peterson was that bad cop in Philadelphia, and then Reich left, and then Peterson was the bad cop and didn't have a good cop in there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think that Frank Reich takes shots like that. And I don't think, again, the Titans have won the division the last 2 years. I don't think Frank Reich is in any position to take shots. He's won one playoff game as the head coach of the Colts. Now, Vrabel's won two, so it's not like Vrabel has won 55 playoff games and Reich's won one, but Vrabel's gotten to an AFC championship and Reich hasn't.
But
so,
also, even if Frank Reich is, you know, throwing shots at the Titans, why does it matter?
I would agree. I mean, it's like when I asked Vrabel about the Colts, and Vrabel was like, oh, yeah, you know, we got to play them and the Texans and the Jags. And I was like, if I was Indianapolis, I'd be throwing that on the screen, and I'd be saying Vrabel's disrespecting the Colts and everything else. But in reality, like, probably wasn't. Maybe it doesn't matter that much. Maybe it does. The things that players get mad about nowadays, it can
they
be the smallest
They get fueled by
stuff.
A lot of different things. Whenever you're getting so much respect and love, sometimes you got to pull the disrespect from anything.
In the Jeter documentary, the Yankees got upset in the Subway Series when they played the Mets in the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
They got upset because before Game 3, you know the song, the Who Let the Dogs Out song?
Yeah.
So the Baja Men played, you know, that was their song. Yeah. That was their only song.
I had their CD when I was little.
And can you name any of the names of the other songs on that CD?
Don't need to.
So the Baja Men were on the field prior to Game 3 at then Shea Stadium, and they played the Who Let the Dogs Out.
Yeah.
And the Yankees were so offended that the Mets would put the Baja Men out on their field that it was like, how dare this low-rent organization put the Baja Men out here? So, again, players get offended by the smallest little thing, so who knows what everybody gets offended by. I just don't think that that's a shot. And so if you're a Titan fan and you heard that from Frank Reich about, I don't believe ground and pound wins, think two things. One, you're a baby. Like, stop the crying.
Yeah.
And two, more importantly, I hope Frank Reich does think that.
If he does, that I think it is the best scenario for the Titans. Because I only view the Colts a legitimate threat to the Titans when Jonathan Taylor is a major player in that offense.
Well, they can't win without Jonathan Taylor.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I know. But they seem to think, like, they want to be more dynamic. They want to be more multifaceted.
I understand wanting to be that, but also let's just be a little bit self-aware here.
Sure.
And recognize who you are and what you have.
Well, I don't want the Titans to be more dynamic offensively. I want the Titans to run the football.
I want the Titans to run the football with Derrick Henry, and if that doesn't work anymore, then you can go from there.
Now, I am worried about something, and this is to the point of what Reich said about winning championships. I know the Titans can get to the AFC Championship game running the football. I know the Titans can win the division running the football.
Can they win the Super Bowl?
I know the Titans can get the number one seed running the football. Can the Titans do that? Can the Titans get past the path in the AFC is going to be, you know, Derek Carr or Justin Herbert, then Josh Allen, then Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow,
mm-hmm.
and can a team outrun all of those guys?
They can do it once.
Here's the thing about the Titans, though, is that Buffalo, they wouldn't have had to play, obviously, because Buffalo lost to Kansas City.
Right.
But going back to last year, they freaking manhandled the Chiefs here. And I think that they manhandled them so well that that wasn't Kansas City had a bad game. That was the style with which the Titans were playing last season. And every season is different. And Kansas City is going to be a different team this year without Tyreek Hill. They might be better. They might be worse. I couldn't tell you. But they're going to be different. But the Titans so manhandled Kansas City, and it really started up front on both lines, but especially the Titans' defensive line versus the Chiefs' offensive line, and the way the defensive line was playing in the playoffs last year, I would only have assumed that that would have happened again. So the Titans, I think, could have gotten to the Super Bowl running the football the way that they've run it. Could they have beaten the Rams again after McVay would have been able to look at the tape, knowing that the Rams would have had 2 weeks to stew on the Sunday night football loss, the embarrassment that the Titans put on them? Would that have made a difference? And again, we can keep going back to that.
But also, yet to that point, I feel like the Chiefs figured something out after that Titans game.
I don't think that
they didn't lose a single game after they lost to the Titans.
Is that true?
Yes. I'm looking at their schedule right now. Beat the Giants the next week, 2017. Beat the Packers, 13-7.
Now, that was the Jordan Love Packers.
Yes, but still, by the way, a win's a win.
Jordan Love sucks.
Well, I don't think that's any new
information. I watched Friday night. Trey Lance looked like a freaking awesome freaking superstar. Jordan Love sucks. Like, I was texting Robbie. I'm like, he sucks. Go on.
But beat the Raiders 41-14, beat the Cowboys 19-9, beat the Broncos 22-9, beat the Raiders again 48-9, beat the Chargers 34-28, beat the Steelers 36-10, and then lost to the Bengals in the AFC Championship game 34-31. They did
that
not
Chargers
lose.
Game was the last game of the year?
Steelers was the last game of the year.
No, the Steelers was the wild card round.
Oh, then yes. Then the last game of the year.
That was the Brandon Staley screw-up?
No, the Brandon Staley screw-up was the next week against the Raiders.
No. The Brandon Staley screw-up against the Chiefs on Thursday Night Football.
Oh, yeah. December 16th.
That must have been when it was.
Mm-hmm.
When Brandon Staley had two field goals in the first half that he didn't kick?
Yes.
And the game went to overtime?
I'm mixing up all of my Brandon Staley screw-ups.
Yeah, he screwed up a lot last year.
So they did not lose a single game after they lost.
I mean, I hope the Colts throw the football. And the way those receivers, that's good for
the Titans.
Those receivers on Saturday, they were horrible against the Bills. They were horrible. 615-737-1025. We'll take your phones on the program. Stillman and Company, 1025-1063, the game. Stillman and Company got a big baseball game to watch tonight. By the way, so yesterday I was throwing out the first pitch at the Sounds. Went to the Sounds game.
Very proud of you.
I probably threw the ball like 5 feet over Booster's head, right?
Yeah, I saw the video, and it was, he didn't even try to catch it. He just looked up at the ball.
I would say that I do have a little bit of an issue with Booster not really
trying
to get the ball.
Well, you go ahead and take that up with Booster.
But
whip him into shape.
I told him when they did, like, he came up to me, like, when we, you know, shook hands or whatever, took the picture. I'm like, dude, you got to at least try to get the ball. Like,
making me look bad.
So everybody's acting like that's a bad first pitch. Let me explain something.
Is everybody acting like that?
Everybody's acting to me like that.
Okay.
So let me explain something to everybody out there. I think this is very important. I don't mind. The reality, as far as manhood is concerned.
Okay.
If I bounce the ball.
It's very delicate.
My manhood gets questioned. The idea that I could not get the ball to the plate. Right?
I would make fun of you. That's
nobody. When I throw it up into the fifth row, nobody, and again, it was online. It just was like literally 6 feet above Booster's head.
Joe Milton.
Literally. Malik Willis.
Yeah.
But when that happens, nobody's questioning, does Jared have the arm strength to be able to get the ball 60 feet? Which was my number one. I looked at it as I had two choices. I could try to throw a strike.
Uh-huh.
Or I could make sure I didn't bounce it.
And I think the latter is the most important.
I took the safe throw.
You're not getting called up.
And I was disappointed because I did want to get a couple of practice cracks at it. If I had a practice throw, which I told the Sounds, like, can I?
Shoulda, woulda.
Well, so I was like, can I go down and throw? They're like, oh, no, can't do that. Restricted area because of COVID. I'm like, COVID? I'm like, nobody talks about COVID anymore.
It's 2022.
The only thing is that people talk about COVID is when they don't want to do something. It's like, oh, I would, but COVID.
Yeah.
But so,
I would love to go to your baby shower, but I have COVID.
COVID.
Yeah.
So, like, COVID. So, anywho, like, I went down to the bullpen just to, like, kind of get, like, a mental gauge. And I could have tried. And since I didn't try to throw it hard, honestly, I probably could have gotten it there. Like, I probably could have gotten it, like, to Booster's head because Booster has a big head. So I probably could have just aimed for the head and gotten it and it would have been fine. But I absolutely, positively did not want to bounce it. And so my dad, my friends went to the game. And so I had talked to them before I threw it. And I told them the story that in 2015, when I was throwing out the first pitch of the Sounds game. Floyd said to me, he was like, whatever you do, no matter what, like, you do not bounce that ball. And he said it in a much sterner tone. And he didn't really say a lot of things with that kind of stern tone, but that was one of them. And so I remember when he said that, and I remember feeling the pressure. And I guess, you know, now that he's dead, I guess I feel the similar pressure about I cannot allow. I'm in a group chat with people that one of them says, that's worse than bouncing it. And the other one who played baseball is like, no, it's absolutely not worse than bouncing it. Bouncing it is a sign of weakness. And I was not willing to bounce the ball. Throwing it over the mascot's head.
You just got to work on your accuracy there.
Is a sign of strength. This kid that went after me was a Vanderbilt Children's Hospital kid.
Uh-huh.
And he had, survived. I think he had like a really tough, I forget exactly what it was, so I don't really want to talk about it. But he, you know, was doing great. And he threw from the front of the mound, uh-huh. and he bounced it there. And I told him, great job, great pitch. And it was a good pitch. But I'm not a kid. So bouncing the ball is not acceptable for me.
Well, and
so,
after all of the hard time that you gave me last year leading up to my first pitch, you reminded me daily, do not bounce that ball. I would have given you hell
did
if
I ever
you would have bounced
you,
that ball.
Did I ever tell you to throw a strike? Was my expectation ever for you to hit the catcher? I mean, I remember—
It was for me, but not from you.
No. The only thing that I've ever—Chase bounced the ball— And did I not let Chase have it when
you
Chase
did.
Bounced the ball?
I believe Darren may have bounced the ball as well.
Guys, what are we doing? Like, to me, that's what I'm saying. I gave Chase the business when he bounced the ball. You can't bounce the ball. So I didn't bounce the ball.
I'm glad you didn't.
The two things I made sure of. One, I threw from the rubber. I'm not going to throw from the base
Another
of the mound.
Thing you made sure that I did.
You throw that ball from the rubber. Two, I didn't bounce it. May have airmailed it. If I had gotten one throw in, then I would have been able to judge it like, oh, okay, you know, I don't have to. Because mm-hmm. the mound, you're then throwing off the mound. I'm throwing down. So I wanted to make sure. Plus, the other times that I made sure that I didn't bounce it, they ended up being strikes. So I figured the third time it would work. This time it just happened to airmail booster. But somebody from the Sounds texted me and was like, oh, I'm not going to, you know, that wasn't a good pitch or whatever. I'm like, I had one goal and I accomplished
that box
goal.
Was checked.
Yeah.
Very proud of you. I hope you had fun on Sunday.
Thank you. Thank you. That's it for us. We're out of here. ESPN Radio coming up next. Stillman and Company. We'll see you all tomorrow at 2:00.